Exodus, chapter 24. Last week we studied verses 3 through 8. This week we'll study the remainder of the chapter, that being verses 1 and 2, as well as 9 through 18. If you have been following along at home, you know that Israel has recently been freed from slavery in Egypt, and that they have traveled to Mount Sinai, where God has appeared in the form of smoke, fire, and storm to deliver his laws to Moses. Last week we discussed the ratification of God's covenant with the people of Israel. In today's passage, Moses and the elders of Israel will be called up onto the mountain where they will see God, and that might raise more questions than it gives answers. In any case, this will be an excellent opportunity to discuss Moses' comings and goings on Mount Sinai before we launch into a lengthy discussion of the tabernacle and everything in it in coming weeks. That will take up a good portion of the rest of Exodus. If you haven't yet read the passage, that being Exodus chapter 24 verses 1 through 2 and 9 through 18, now is an excellent time to pause and do so. Now, if you don't know anything about the Bible but what is commonly portrayed in popular culture or taught in Sunday school, you might think that Moses went up the mountain of God once to receive the Ten Commandments, and that was that. If you paid a little more attention to the story, then you probably already know he made at least two trips up the mountain because, spoiler alert, he will end up breaking the Ten Commandments and will have to go back to get a second copy. What you probably wouldn't have known without deeper study, though, is that the Bible actually records Moses ascending the mountain to interact with God four separate times while Israel was encamped at Mount Sinai. So, since narratives are few and far between while we're studying all of these laws, I want to give you a breakdown of the entire Sinai timeline before we get into today's specific narrative. First, as we already discussed in Exodus chapters 19 through 20, God appeared on Mount Sinai and spoke to all the people. That was on the third day after arrival at Sinai. In that instance, the people insisted that God not continue to speak to them lest they die. See a message on November 26, 2017 for more information on that. Thereafter, Moses went up the mountain and received the first round of commands. Then he returned to give the commands to the people. We've been talking about that for months, and it is recorded in Exodus chapter 20, verses 21 through Exodus 24, verse 8. The people made a covenant there to obey the commands of God. Now Moses ascends the mountain a second time, and the elders of Israel ascend the mountain halfway with him and see God, as we just read in Exodus 24, 1-10. Moses will go farther up the mountain than the others, waiting until the seventh day when God calls him. After 7 days, Moses continues up to the top of the mountain, where he stays with God for 40 days. During this stay, in Exodus chapter 24, verses 17 through chapter 31, verse 18, he receives instructions for the creation of the tabernacle and receives the original tablets of stone engraved with the law. Moses then descends the mountain and finds that the people have made a golden calf, which they worship. Exodus 32 records that Moses kills the idolaters, breaks the tablets, and goes back up the mountain for his third time to beg God's forgiveness on behalf of the people. At this time, God commands the people to leave Mount Sinai. They will not do so for an extended period of time, however. Hereafter, in chapter 33, Moses descends the mountain and God meets him at the tent of meeting, not to be confused with the tabernacle, which won't be constructed until later. Finally, God commands Moses to come back up Mount Sinai for the fourth time with two new tablets of stone so that the laws can be rewritten. That will be in Exodus chapter 34. In that fourth trip up the mountain, God shows himself to Moses and reiterates his blessings and certain commands. Moses descends the mountain with his face famously shining. So that's a bird's eye view of where we've been and where we're going in terms of narrative in the second half of Exodus. You'll note that there isn't a great deal of narrative here. We've got 16 chapters to go, and most of them will be concerned with the instructions for and construction of the tabernacle. With all of that said, let's jump into today's narrative. In verses 1 and 2 of chapter 24, God speaks to Moses, and he has some new instructions. Moses is to bring a specific group of people part of the way up the mountain to Jehovah. The group, however, is not to ascend the mountain all the way. They will go halfway, and then Moses alone will go to the top where Jehovah is. So, who is to go halfway with Moses? Well, first there's Moses' brother Aaron. We've talked about him a lot in the past. Along with Aaron come Nadab and Abihu. Don't be embarrassed if you don't remember them. They've been mentioned only once before, and that was in a genealogy recorded at Exodus chapter 6. We discussed that genealogy on August 27th of 2017. There we found that Nadab and Abihu are Aaron's two eldest sons. I won't spoil the end for you, but they will wind up meeting an untimely death. Now, it hasn't been explicitly stated yet, but Aaron and his sons will ultimately receive the priesthood, meaning that they will be the ones who are responsible for ministering as something of a liaison between God and God's people. Along with these fledgling priests, God calls for 70 elders of Israel. And that bothers me somewhat, because it lacks the kind of pinpoint precision that I find comforting. Who are these 70 elders? It seems obvious enough that these elders are old men, as the word itself would normally describe, but beyond that, we are left to guess about exactly who God is asking for. Are these men some kind of political leaders? Were they selected in some special way? Are they perhaps the judges whom Moses appointed in chapter 19? If they are, then the language of the passage doesn't tell us that specifically. Perhaps these are just heads of local family clans who inherited their position as chief by some birthright. Maybe they are just the literal 70 oldest men in Israel. It may even be that they are not old men at all. The language is vague enough that there could be women in the mix as well. If you asked me for my guess, though, I would suppose that, based on the historical and contextual circumstances, these are men and old men, leaders of familial clans who had prominent positions not by any particular right, but simply because their families under them recognized them as leaders. Whomever they are, one thing is clear. The instruction is good enough for Moses. Either God knows specifically which elders Moses is to select, and Moses knows who those elders are, or when God says, get 70 of the elders of Israel, there are just enough elderly people hanging around who fit the ticket, so that Moses can pick out 70 of them and they'll do the trick. So, why does God call this group up the mountain? He calls them up because he's about to do something. While Moses is on the mountain, God will be establishing his recently covenanted laws, literally chiseling them into stone, and he'll be making preparations to initiate Aaron and his sons as priests, with religious worship centered at the tabernacle. Now, if I know anything about people, I know this. They aren't likely to accept a person who says, I'm the boss because God says so. Without some kind of evidence, people don't like that, and good for them. They should want some kind of evidence. So these elders of Israel are about to have evidence that God has in fact chosen Moses, Aaron, and Aaron's sons. So whomever these elders are, we have a good expectation that they will go down the mountain and report on what they saw, such that the people who are following them will believe Moses and Aaron's leadership. So what do they see on the mountain? Jehovah himself. We read about the encounter in verses 9 through 11. The group of men are traveling up the mountain, and while we presume they are looking up, they see above them what is described as a clear pavement. This pavement has a clarity that is likened to the sky itself, but it evidently also has some opacity to it, with a blue color, like a sapphire, a precious gemstone. And on the pavement they see the feet of God. We note here that the description of God is sparse. It seems to me that the elders of Israel didn't so much see God as they saw a glimpse of a part of God, perhaps with the rest of him obscured by the semi-transparent pavement. In fact, as we know that no one can see God and live, care of Exodus 33, some have argued that the elders must not have seen much, and that this is how they got around the see me and die rule. Now, exactly how much of God they saw is a point of some discussion, though. The passage says that they saw God's feet, but it does not explicitly say that they saw nothing else of him. It is very possible that the elders saw much more, and that they did not describe the specifics. Perhaps they couldn't describe what God looked like. He is, I am sure, something different from anything they had seen before. Perhaps they very easily could have described it, but chose not to do so, so that the people would not be tempted to create an idol in God's image. Whatever the case, we don't have much description of what the elders saw on the mountain. We know that they saw God's feet. I'm sure it was enough to impress them, and it ought to be enough to satisfy us. That said, though, the passage still raises some questions that are difficult to answer, Questions like, what is God made of? Or does he have a human body? Or how did they see God and live to tell about it? I don't think we're going to have any easy, neatly packaged solutions to these problems. I think, though, that the easiest solution deals with them in a way that is consistent with how we have answered similar questions before. I believe that when Moses and the elders ascended the mountain, they saw the second person of the Trinity, the Son, Jesus Christ, in the flesh. God, as in God the Father, does not have a physical body. We read in John chapter 4, verse 23, that Jesus tells us God is a spirit. We know, however, that Jesus himself had a physical body. This also explains the apparent discrepancy of humans being unable to see God and live. No one has seen the Father, John 1:18 tells us as much. However, many have seen the Son. It is my assertion, then, that the visible manifestations of God in the Old Testament are Jesus Christ, the Son. There is, however, a thorny little difficulty here, in that we expect Jesus did not have a physical body until he was miraculously conceived in Mary's womb. I suppose we could answer that by noting that, theoretically, God is not bound by our conception of time. Hypothetically, Jesus could have been born into a fleshly body and then traversed time to appear in the Old Testament as flesh and bone. Then again, we might also note that God has total control over our laws of physics, meaning that he can create matter, he can manipulate light waves, he can induce hallucinations of the mind. In short, God can make you see anything he wants you to see, and he can make an object, physical or virtual, representing himself in any way that he wants. Let's not forget, we're dealing with the creator of the universe here. He has free rein to do whatever he wants, however he wants, and that includes showing amazing things and then not explaining them fully. So I have no problem with the idea that this is somehow the pre-incarnate Christ, and that this is why the elders didn't all die. Of course, there are other explanations. We could consider verse 11. That verse says specifically that God did not lay his hand on the chief men of Israel. That could give us the idea that God made an exception to his normal see me and die rule, but I think it is a weak explanation. For starters, it is unclear what the rule even means if God makes exceptions to it every time he wants to show himself. I'm not sure how anyone could see God otherwise. It's not like they're going to sneak up and catch him unaware. So we would suppose that any instance in which God shows himself would be an exception to the rule. And if that's the case, why have the rule at all? And besides, I think that the God made an exception solution raises more questions than it gives answers. If this is God the Father revealing himself and making an exception allowing people to see him, then why does he have feet? The Father is a spirit. It would seem strange for him to have human feet walking around. And while we're at it, why would he have a material being of any kind such that it would reflect light and be visible at all? Then again, if a person cannot see God and live, and God has no material being which can be seen, doesn't the rule become a moot point? If there's nothing to see, why proclaim that a person who sees it will die? That raises a pretty serious question about the rule altogether, and it leads some to the conclusion, contrary to what we find explicitly written in the scriptures, that God the Father has a physical, material, human-like body. Well, I'll disagree with them on that, but I suppose if they think it, then I won't argue with them on it, because, let's face it, this is somewhat unclear. So as I said at the outset, we don't necessarily have any clear answers about what exactly the elders saw, or all of its possible ramifications, and I suppose that while it is interesting to think about, we don't need specific answers on the point. If we needed those answers, God would have clearly given them to us, but he didn't. What we need to know, we know, and what we know is that God appeared somehow to the elders of Israel, and for whatever reason, they did not die. Much to the contrary, they stopped their hike up the mountain to eat and drink. God's appearance serves as a significant reminder that he does in fact exist, and that he supports the Aaronic priesthood. So, that is what will go back to the people. Thereafter, God called Moses higher up the mountain. Specifically, God called Moses up for the purpose of giving his laws chiseled in tablets of stone. On his command, Moses and Joshua, his assistant, perhaps also considered one of the elders of Israel, continued up the mountain, leaving the other elders behind. Moses gave the elders specific instructions that Aaron, his sons, and the other elders should wait for him. If I understand the Hebrew correctly, then the English translations are correct in saying that Moses instructed the elders to wait here, as in, don't go anywhere until I get back. Stay halfway up the mountain. Of course, we know, skipping ahead to Exodus 32, that Aaron and the elders didn't obey that command. Moses would be gone for at least 40 days, according to chapter 24, verse 18. If the 7 days of waiting are not included in that 40 days, then he was gone for a full 47 days. That's a long time to wait around on a mountain for a guy to come back down. Regardless, they should have waited, but they didn't. Instead, they went back down the mountain. And of course, we note that before Moses went higher, Moses left Aaron and Hur in charge of the judiciary. Hur, you may recall, we saw previously in Exodus chapter 17. When Moses' hands grew tired from holding up his staff, Hur helped to hold them up. We were also introduced to Joshua in that same narrative, where he led a battle against the Amalekites. So Moses and Joshua continued higher up the mountain, and the mountain was covered with the glory of God, which we are told in verse 16 was more of his cloud theophany. For 6 days, Moses and Joshua waited in the cloud, but on the 7th day, God called Moses up higher. My presumption is that he left Joshua behind at that point. Moses ascended higher and higher to the top of the mountain, where God's presence was less like cloud and more like fire. Evidently, this was the same kind of fire-like light display that was manifest at the burning bush, because just as the bush didn't burn up, neither did Moses. And that concludes our narrative for today. So after months of legalese, we have some interesting storytelling in today's passage. The people have made a covenant with God, and God has ordered that Moses return to the top of the mountain to receive a permanent symbol of that covenant, the law chiseled in stone. On this second trip up the mountain, Moses did not go alone. For the first half of the journey, he was accompanied by the elders of Israel, whomever they were, and by representatives of the upcoming priesthood. While on the mountain, the elders saw the feet of God in a spectacular display, which is both amazing and mysterious, leaving us with some unanswered and perhaps unanswerable questions. After this divine visitation, Moses and Joshua ascended higher, into the cloud, and ultimately Moses went to the mountaintop, into the fire theophany itself, to receive the laws from the hand of God. He will stay on the mountaintop for 40 days. While he is there, he will receive the tablets of stone, and he will also receive instructions on how the stones are to be kept. For much of the remainder of the book of Exodus, we will examine the tabernacle, a special tent in which these stones are to be kept. While on the mountain, God will instruct Moses on how to construct the tabernacle and its furnishings, and then Moses will have people to construct it according to God's commands. I can assure you that it will all be riveting discussion. In-depth discussion of the tabernacle, however, will be reserved for members only, because it is considered advanced material. It's more than you need for the fundamentals of your faith. So, if you're excited about hearing that, then we want you to become a member here at East Jordan. Becoming a member at East Jordan is easy and free. The first step is to create an account. Then you'll need to listen to a requisite number of sermons and pass a few simple courses on soteriology and the rules for membership. Thereafter, you can contact an elder like myself to confirm your membership. Easy peasy. We hope you'll join us in time for discussion on the tabernacle next week, but if not, we'll look forward to talking with you again when we move on to simpler and more essential discussion. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.